Welcome. I'm here now. Okay. Now we'll all come into the room and into our bodies and right, just to we'll do a little meditation. Yeah. So taking our posture, our meditation posture, in a state of comfort and ease. Oh, hello. I'm not here yet. Let's see. And no one said. Is it bright in here? They are prescriptions, well, so and that's why I don't know I have them on. One time I sat through a whole interview with my sunglasses on.
Did you get
it? Oh, dear. Mm-hmm. Okay. Blessed are those who can laugh at themselves, for they shall never cease to be amused. All right. Now we'll start again. Useful to take a few deep breaths to simply... Here we are. To come into the body. And on an in-breath, I invite you to bring your awareness to the crown of your head. And then gently, like a mist settling in the valley, float down inside your body, releasing any tension, taking note of the places where you hold tension. Behind the eyes, soften your face, your brow, your jaw, down to the back of your neck, and across your shoulders. Down your arms to the tips of your fingers. Floating down your torso, notice your upper back. Lower back, let your muscles succumb to gravity, all the way to your sit bones, let your belly be soft. Let it rise and fall as you breathe in and out. Float down your legs, past your knees, to the tips of your toes. Feel the places where your body touches the cushion, the mat. Establish a sense of groundedness. Being safe. Well held in the arms of Mother Earth. Then allow your energy, your awareness to rise slowly back up through your body, lifting and brightening as you come all the way back to the crown of your head. And connect there to the energy of the heavens. Vast, limitless, a sense of abundance. And think to yourself, I'm content. I have enough. Right here, in this moment, I'm safe. And I have enough. Now imagine, if you will, that the earth energy and the heaven energy come together at your heart center. Taking the aspect of a small sphere of warm radiating light, the size of a robin's egg. Place your mind right there. The nature of this light is love. And allow that warm light to expand. And imagine it filling your body with loving energy. And know that you are loved. And this loving energy is uncontainable. Imagine that it passes through all of your pores in all directions, until it fills the infinitude of space. Awareness expanded as far as your imagination allows. Then gradually, like breath on a mirror, it begins to contract back. Getting smaller and smaller. Until it is simply a small sphere of light at your heart, available in any moment to tap into this sense of being loved and loving. And just rest there. Nothing to do. Now imagine, if you will, in front of you, Shakyamuni Buddha, or for you, the symbol of the highest good. Golden light body, also in the aspect of love. And imagine that you are surrounded. On your left is your mother. On your right is your father. Behind you, friends and family. Picture them in your mind's eye. All those close to you. In front of you, the troublemakers in your life. Those you might label your enemy. And then filling space, all the sentient beings of the six realms of existence, all in human form but manifesting their own particular kinds of suffering. And think, just as I long to have happiness and freedom from suffering, so too do all these beings. And therefore, through the power of love, which is wishing all beings to have happiness, and the power of compassion, which is wishing all beings to be free from suffering, we generate this intention, a pure intention, to free all beings from suffering. But then we look at our current condition, and we recognize that only an enlightened being has the potential. So we long for that mind, that enlightened mind. And cultivate bodhicitta, the wish for enlightenment, in order to liberate every living being. And that makes us a bodhisattva. An enlightenment warrior. And Buddhas are born from bodhisattvas. So let us make that our motivation for participating in tonight's practices and teachings, to actualize our highest human potential, perfect enlightenment, in order to liberate every living being. And to do that, we'll start by offering a mandala, leading all the beings surrounding us in that practice. Oh, this ground scented with perfume and covered with flowers, adorned by Mount Meru, four worlds, sun and moon, I imagine as a Buddha. This jewel mandala to you, my precious guru. So we imagine the Buddha in front of us, our teacher, the aspect of the Buddha, gratefully receiving that, and we take refuge. It is our refuge that sets us apart. When we take refuge, we are acknowledging our profound potential to actualize enlightenment. I go for refuge until enlightenment to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha by my virtuous actions of giving and so on. May I become a Buddha to benefit all beings. I go for refuge until enlightenment to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha by my virtuous actions of giving and so on. May I become a Buddha to benefit all beings. I go for refuge until enlightenment to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha by my virtuous actions of giving and so on. May I become a Buddha to benefit all beings. May all beings have equanimity, free of attachment and aversion. May all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all beings be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. May all beings find good rebirths and the bliss of liberation. So now we request blessings. May we be inspired by guru devotion, uplifted by the preciousness of this human life. Shed the fetters of attachment and aversion through a knowledge of impermanence. Be protected by refuge, guided by a knowledge of actions and their results. Aim for liberation through renunciation. May we be motivated by bodhicitta, opened by giving, disciplined by ethical behavior, strengthened by patience, induced by joy and suffering, stabilized by concentration, and free by wisdom. So now imagine that your teacher in the aspect of Shakyamuni Buddha is incredibly pleased with you, like a parent for their only child. So you imagine them smiling at you. And wishing to grant your wish, they melt into a small sphere of light. And they come to the crown of your head. And begin to descend down through the center of your body until they come to rest at your heart center. always there as your best friend. So this is the last class for now. I think I'm going to use the whiteboard. Let's do it. All right. So, but you have to help me because I'm not switching to the next slide until I'll let you help me with that. So we talked about, we've gone over four thoughts that turn the mind to practice. So we've talked about in Lama Tsongkhapa's Lam Rim, the very first of the three principal aspects of the path is what? Renunciation.
No longer being defined by the things that you have. It's letting go of things.
Letting go. Letting go. That's part of it. That's a good part of it. Yes, it's letting go. In Tibetan, the word for renunciation is nyenjung. And it means definite emergence. It means I'm getting out of here. It means I'm going to be free from suffering. You see, samsara is being trapped in this cycle of birth, aging, sickness, and death. On and on and on. Birth, aging, sickness, and death. Life after life after life. So that is samsara. And renunciation is saying, no, I'm going to be free of that. I don't want any more of that. So there are four things that bring us to this conclusion that we want to be free of samsara, that we want to practice in order to be free of samsara. Number one. That's the fourth one.
Oh.
Suffering.
It's a lot of room.
Okay.
Precious human life.
Precious human life. Number two.
It's gonna go.
It's gonna go. That's right. impermanence. Death and impermanence. Then?
There is a way out.
Do, 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 do. What keeps us?
Karma.
Karma.
Okay. Good. We initiated the whiteboard. I feel so good about that. Okay, so we have this precious human life, and we talked about its qualities, right? We have the fact that we have this precious human life, which means not just a human life, but a human life that has complete sense faculties, that has an interest in the Dharma, that is born at a time when Dharma actually exists, and that it's being taught, and that it's being supported. So we have this sort of very, very rare opportunity. And we did go through that, thinking about what happens. What happens if you don't have, you could have a really good human life. You know? You could have everything you could possibly want. But it wouldn't be classified as a precious human life if you don't have an opportunity to practice Dharma. That's the key. Not only having the opportunity, but to have the interest. You know? To have the interest. And then not only to have the interest, but to actually cultivate your practice. You know? To learn, to practice. And to figure out how you can practice all day. Not just on your cushion, you know, to glue your practice to your daily activities. Belinda posted a Facebook of Mingyur Rinpoche, a little 10-minute clip talking about how to practice all day. How to practice just remembering Dharma is practicing. Just remembering, oh, this precious moment. I was driving here and I was recalling presence, you know, being present. And when you're present, what you see are the clouds and the colors and the sensation, the feeling, the wonderment of being alive when you are present. And looking for ways to help people, you know, letting somebody get in front of you when you're driving, hoping somebody wants to get, come out from a side street, you know, so you can let them in. Looking for ways to really benefit. This is presence. And we wouldn't even be thinking about it if we hadn't heard about it. And we wouldn't have heard about it if we hadn't created the cause, the karma, to actually be here. The karma to be here was created by you in your previous life. And they say that that karma is pure prayer and pure morality, or pure ethics. But in addition to pure ethics, they say, and the rest. So what they mean is the six perfections. So the perfections, the path of the bodhisattva. So what are the six perfections? Number one?
Giving.
Generosity. Two?
Ethical behavior.
Three?
Patience.
Giving, ethics, patience.
Joyful
effort.
Concentration.
And wisdom. Yes. So we cultivate these six in our life to ensure that we will, in fact, actually, I don't say this. Some people say, to ensure that we'll have another precious human rebirth. I say, to ensure that we'll reach enlightenment in this lifetime. Let's go for the gold right now and work toward that. So we have something that's so rare and precious, and we're going to lose it. You see? We are going to lose it. And we don't know when. And all the things that we have, all of our, the things that we work for, you know, our house and our car and our clothes and our pets, our job, all the things we do, you know, that we think are so the most important thing. You know, we think they're the most important thing. That's because we don't understand impermanence. Thinking that we must now collect a few more things. Dasha will tell you we need to declutter. Help me, please. Everything we own requires a piece of our, takes a piece of our mind. Everything that we have, there's some thread there. You know, when you get rid of things that you aren't using anymore, you clear your space, you make your place clean, clear, it's like a burden is lifted. But we collect because that's what we do. That's what we're told from the time we're little. You know, as soon as you listen to watch TV, it's really inculcated in us to think that we need to have these things and that we wouldn't be happy unless we had these things, that our happiness is invested in those things. And it's really very sad when we find out that that's not true, that we can't find the happiness in those things. Darn. Because we do look, and we do have momentary happiness when we get things that we desire. We do have the momentary happiness of getting what we want. Because when we get what we want, we think, fantastic, and then there's this sense of contentment. And that's what happiness is defined as by Webster, is a state of well-being, contentment. So we feel well and content when we get what we want. But what we got, many times we see right away, within a few minutes, as soon as you figure out that you can't figure out how to use it. Right then, that happiness wanes. And we begin to see that the happiness is not in the object. The happiness is in our freedom from wanting. So we want something other than what is. We're not in the moment, satisfied, content, peaceful with what is. We want something else. Either we want to have something we desire, or we want freedom from something we are repulsed by or don't like. And our whole Dharma practice, all the tools, all the studying that we do is meant to be a catalyst for transformation. It's meant to be a tool to use, to think about, so that we are not grasping or pushing away. But we're able to look at each moment as it is. As it is. It's amazing when we can do that. When we can let go in the moment of our worries, of our fantasizing about the future, of wishing that we hadn't done, hadn't said, thinking about what we will say, or thinking about what we should have said. You know, how many stories do we tell? On and on and on, circular stories, which make things more concrete. It makes everything more concrete. So we understand we have this precious life, and we understand we're going to lose it. And if we do actually think about impermanence and understand that we're going to lose this life, we are more inclined to mind our karma. We are more inclined. We're more inclined to mind our actions. What is karma? In Tibetan, the word is le, L-E. Do you know what that translates as, really?
Action.
Action. Mm-hmm. Movement of the mind. Which has come to mean actions and their result. So we say karma. This is a karmic result. But really, the word itself just means action. So good and bad actions. Good actions produce a happy result. Bad actions produce a suffering result. By definition, a negative action is one that produces a suffering result now and in the future. And a virtuous action is one that produces happiness now and in the future. If we really believe that, if we study it and we really look at it, deeply looking at it, then it's almost impossible for us to engage in activities that will bring harm to others, because it brings harm to us. It's interesting to watch how you catch yourself, I catch myself, making a mistake, and immediately I want to purify that mistake. Immediately I want to be free of a mind that allows me to say or think or do something that would harm any being. Because all beings wish happiness, you see? All beings. And you look at, His Holiness says, even down to the tiniest insect. We think about, I think about this at home, because sometimes I have ants in my kitchen. And I've done, you tap on the counter, and they go. You know, you just, and they go. And they all, you know, kind of go right back wherever they came in, that you can follow them. And you just watch them. Where did they go? It doesn't take very long for most of, even you can have a whole counter full of ants. And because there's a drop of honey somewhere, or there's a crumb of a cookie, or there's something there, and that you can see there's a whole string of them there. Big, oh, many. You tap. And they're, you know, they're freaked out. And they go. Now there will be some that will stay, you know, peripherally, gently take them out. But you can see that there's fear arising in those ants. But better to have them go than to harm them. But you can definitely see ants are sentient beings. They don't want to be harmed any more than we want to be harmed. And that's true of all beings. So trying to have a mind that recognizes that all the time, always holding sentient beings as dear. Because in reality, it is sentient beings that are the base of our own enlightenment. Without sentient beings, how could we practice generosity? How could we practice patience if there was no one there to irritate us? Just be so grateful to those irritating people, right? Because it is upon the sentient beings that we ourselves have the ability to practice. Isn't it? Please.
Renunciation. I don't know how that equates to the four thoughts that turn the mind.
Okay, well, these four thoughts when you recognize that you have a precious human life, you're going to lose it. You create it by karma. Whether or not you continue to create the causes for another precious human life, or whether you create the cause to be born in an animal body or in a hell body or a ghost, hungry ghost body, you don't know what seeds you've planted. We have planted seeds to be born in all of those realms. The seeds are there. What's going to happen at the time of our death? What we've cultivated in this mind, in this lifetime, what is the habit of this mind? Where does our mind go when somebody irritates us? Where does our mind go when we're afraid? You know, clinging, grasping. So there's a lot of suffering in samsara, right? And so renunciation is, I don't want to participate in that anymore. I'm done with that game. So these four thoughts, by recognizing what you have, that you're going to lose it, how you create it, and that the suffering that ensues if we don't practice creates this mindset that says, I must practice. The first verse in Lama Tsongkhapa's Three Principles of the Path, which is like this. He says, I bow down to the venerable spiritual masters. I will explain as well as I'm able the essence of the teachings of the conquerors, the path praised by the conquerors and their spiritual children. Listen with clear minds, you fortunate ones who direct your mind to the path pleasing to the Buddha, and strive to make good use of leisure and opportunity without being attached to the joys of cyclic existence. For you embodied beings bound by the craving for existence, without the pure determination to be free, renunciation, there is no way to cut the attractions to its pleasurable effects. Thus, from the outset, seek to generate the determination to be free. By contemplating the leisure and endowments, this precious human life, so difficult to find, and its fleeting nature, death and impermanence, reverse the clinging to this life. By contemplating the effects of karma and the miseries of cyclic existence, reverse the clinging to future lives. In this way, when you have unceasingly, day and night, the mind aspiring for liberation, then you have generated the determination to be free. So, day and night, this mind wishing to be free. So it is precious human life and death and impermanence. By contemplating those two, you think, I'm not going to just work for this life. I'm going to work for the happiness of future lives. You know, I'm going to live a good life. I'm going to be a good person. And I'm going to work for the happiness of future lives. But then when you look at karma and suffering, the whole suffering realm, we looked at the hell realms and the ghost realms and the suffering that is unbelievable, unbearable suffering. We don't want to fall into those realms. So we say, no, I can't take a chance. I absolutely can't take a chance. I have to be free from samsara altogether. So that, they say, practice like your hair is on fire. Yeah. Totally relaxed. Do you think? Yeah, so that's how it relates. Does it make sense then?
Yeah. I was stumbled over renounced and renunciation. It's always been a stumbling block.
Right. So renouncing, oftentimes people think, oh, they talk about being a renunciate.
Right.
Like a monk or a nun, very renouncing pleasure. Lama used to say, you don't have to renounce your chocolate. You renounce suffering. That's what we're renouncing. We are renouncing
the
suffering.
The determination to be free makes much more sense to me.
Definitely emerging. Definite emergence. It's just that renunciation is something that they have, that was translated 30, 40 years ago, and it's stuck. But definite emergence is one that Alex Berzin uses and is more in line, I think. It's one that we can understand because it's not renouncing the pleasure of this life. Lama used to say, enjoy as much as possible, dear, without grasping. You see, that's the key. Enjoy. Do enjoy your life. But it's all going to change. Yeah?
Like you said, as I was driving down from the hills, it was just gorgeous the way the sun was hitting the trees, turning the new leaves bright green, the dark trunks of the oak really, really dark, and the grass all the rest was stunning, you know, just enjoying it. Without grasping.
Was
so nice.
That's sort of being in the moment and enjoying. That's appreciating this life. Really appreciating. Turning the mind to beauty. Uplifting the spirit. It's something we can do regularly. To be happy. This is what we long for, is happiness. Where is happiness? Where?
Wherever I am, it can be. From the mind.
From the mind. Happiness is in the mind. And so is suffering. This was the thing that was the most, one of the most shocking things that I read when I was in long retreat. It was Master Saraha. Here's a quote. Pretty close. I bow down to that which projects both freedom and the cycle. I bow down to that which grants me every goal I desire. I bow down to the mind. For it is mind and mind alone that is the seed of everything. Now, I said, okay, everything comes from the mind. But when I went back and looked at the first line, I bow down to that which projects both freedom and the cycle. What does it mean to project? I had to look that up in Webster's because people say it all the time. Oh, it's just your projection. What does that mean?
It's the meaning we make of what's happening.
It's the meaning we make of what's happening, yeah. It's, yeah.
It's coming from inside, and we're putting it out there on the world.
It's to ascribe characteristics to persons, places, and things, to create in the mind. So, if you think that you're projecting samsara, you're creating it in your mind, and you're also projecting nirvana. Hello? I thought nirvana was, you know, like somewhere out there. When you think about that, deeply think about that, you see that it's just a mind change. Two sides to the same coin. It's not like samsara is a place. Samsara is a projection of your mind. We say we're going to go to the hells. We're going to experience the karmic result of hell. I don't know. It's to really to cook. It's really to think about. It's quite profound to think like that. That it is a projection of our mind. But we can see, can we not see that you're, let's say you're really happy, you're enjoying your day, having a nice cup of tea, and then you get a phone call, and somebody starts lambasting you, you know, telling you this, 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 and this, and you did that, and you did that. You know, then your happiness goes out the window. Then your little dog comes in, or some child comes and gives you some candy, or some beautiful thing happens. Somebody gives you a rose. Then your happiness comes back again. It's like we're looking, we're not looking at where the happiness is. We're saying that this circumstance is causing me to suffer, or this person is causing me to be happy, or this candy is making me happy, or this ice cream is making me happy. Just looking at the mind, how you can flip the mind. Instead of looking at the glass as half full or half empty, determining full or empty. If it's half empty, then we're worried because we just don't think we have enough. But if it's half full, we think, wow, I've still got another half left. What? It's just in that way we think about it. It's just the way we think about it. And given that, it's time for tea. So have a cup. And then we'll come back to...
Yay! Look, it's a samsara cold. It's like the samsara food.
This one we haven't really looked at enough.
It's a ticket.